Hello, and welcome to the Changemakers podcast. I'm Dave Corlett, Business Director at the creative agency ShapeBuy, and in this series, I chat to leading marketers at what we call Changemaker Brands, businesses on a mission to change the world for the better through technology. What I want to find out is the role that creativity plays in helping them to communicate the benefits of their technology. Hopefully their insights, experience and stories can help you supercharge your own creativity. This is a conversation between myself and Gwen Lafarge, who is the VP of brand at the communications platform Sinch, based out of Stockholm. Gwen first came to my attention with her own podcast called the Tech Marketing Pod Chat, which is just, episode after episode of really riveting conversations with folks from across the tech marketing industry. We struck up a bit of a relationship on LinkedIn, which led to this conversation. So I'm really grateful that she could join me. We had a fantastic chat about all things brand when it comes to B2B tech. I was particularly interested in her thoughts on high growth businesses like Sinch, who've grown from 400 to 4,000 people in the space of little over a year. And much more besides. I mean, it's one of those topics that we could talk all day about, and we nearly did, to be honest. So I had a whole host of questions that we never got around to talking about because we just shot the breeze on all sorts of things, as you'll hear. So here we go. This is my conversation with Gwen Lafarge, the VP of brand at Sinch. Enjoy. Gwen, hello. A big warm welcome to the Changemakers. How are you doing today?
Hi. Thank you. I'm great. Thank you for having me here.
How is Stockholm today?
Actually, beautiful. It's sunny, which is really nice, and a bit cold, but not too much. So it's a pretty nice fall or autumn day.
Excellent. We should introduce you first, obviously. Gwen Lafarge, VP of brand at Sinch. We'll come in a little while to Sinch and who they are and what they do, I'm sure. But the first thing I wanted to kind of cover off with you was your quite fascinating career path, both in terms of agency side, client side, and also the locations as well. What I'd really love to know is how you got to where you are today at Sinch in Stockholm via London, San Francisco, Paris, anywhere else?
Yeah, that's about it. I'm a little bit of a traveler. I guess very shortly, I started my career in advertising agencies, actually in London, and then moved to Paris, still on the creative agency side. I moved to San Francisco for a short while there. I had my own business. I had an art gallery, so nothing to do with tech or agencies for a few years. Then I went back to creative agency. So I worked for a B2B creative agency based in San Francisco. And the owner of that agency is Swedish. And we had the project of opening a European office. So I volunteered to come back to Europe, as I'm originally from France, so it was a bit closer. So come back to Europe and open our office in Stockholm. So I've done that for a few years and then realized I should try to see what it's like on the other side. So Sinch is actually one of my first job in-house, if we call it that way. Yes.
Cool. And what made you initially want to get into the world of marketing and advertising? Obviously, like you said, in on the agency side, what was your reason for getting into that whole world?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that's, it was from a very young age, I guess, or when I was in college, I knew I wanted to work for creative agencies for some reason. I that's where I did my very first internship, so many, many years ago. and I just was attracted, I think, to the creativity. I liked old school advertising, the ads. I was, as a kid, I would cut off ads in magazines, mostly for perfume and stuff like that, I think, but which is not at all what I do today, right? But I think that's kind of how it started. I was really liking those beautiful visuals and those kind of eye-catching ads. That's kind of where my career started, in old school advertising.
I was the same, but mine was football shirts. So obviously every football shirt has a sponsor and a sponsor's logo. And I was really interested in the design of those kits. But actually the fun part of creating kind of theoretical, what would my team shirt look like next year? Let's do a cool design. Was oh, cool. Could they be sponsored by Nike? Or could they be sponsored by someone Apple or someone really, really cool? And that was kind of a really cool intro to brands and branding, just around that side of things. So yeah, a very similar story. Has it always been B2B that you've worked in, on an agency side, or a bit of both?
Not at all. Like, I started in like large agencies, and I started as what we called, now I'll show my age, but that below the line, right? That what we called it back in the day. We call it below the line and above the line, right? The line being like, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so I started in below the line and did a lot of direct marketing in a way which is kind of like the almost the old version of ABM in some ways, right? But for a lot of like consumer brands, like my first assignment or like were for like some of Procter & Gamble brands, work for Coca-Cola brands. So really like consumer brands at the beginning. B2B came much later in my career, and mostly I did a little bit in those big agencies I worked for. Like I worked at like Leo Burnett and RCG, like some of the big agencies. But then I worked for a smaller creative agency in San Francisco, and that was all B2B tech. And that's like where I mostly discovered like tech advertising or tech marketing. Being at the center of it all in Silicon Valley.
Do you see that there's a dramatically big distinction between what you were doing in terms of on the consumer side and then obviously getting into more B2B, particularly around tech? Do you see it as kind of hugely different, or do you, you know, because I was literally reading an article today by one of our clients, a lady called Monica Kumar, who's the SVP of marketing at a tech company called Nutanix, talking about this very familiar thing now, which is B2H, you know. B2B and B2C, you're marketing mm-hmm. to humans. You know, we all have emotions. Obviously, the buying decisions and the decision making and the stakeholders involved might be slightly different, and the buying cycle. But ultimately, you know, we're still humans with emotions and needs that need to be fulfilled. How do you see that?
Yeah, it's getting closer and closer. I would say that back in the day, probably was very different. Like B2B was really dry. You had to like appear very professional, so everything was meant for being businessy and not taking into account that actually human are buying on the other side. Like they might be human at work, right? Like today, that's kind of how we see it. It's like the human at work, they might not be spending their own budget, so that's still kind of a difference, but still there's definitely a big part in how they buy that is related to their emotion and their feeling and the people they trust. And so not really just about very rational buying, which we, I think, believe for a long time that it was all, B2B was all about very, very rational, right? And comparing product features and comparing price in the end. And in reality, it's not just that. But so I think it's getting closer. So I think B2B still have a lot to learn from B2C brands, especially when it comes to brands and branding in general. I think we still see a lot of like B2B companies mostly focusing on the product features and not really focusing on the brand or on storytelling, which is something that consumer brands have understood for a long time now. So I think we still have some learnings to get from there. They like they put creativity, I think, like more front and center that a lot of B2B brands are doing. It's shifting, and I think that shift is coming from some of those tech companies in Silicon Valley that have really understood that and are putting creativity at the center of what they do, or putting the consumer at the center of what they do. And in a sense, when you do that and think about what makes people tick, right? What makes them react, then you understand that a big part of it is emotions. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's always slightly baffled me because, you know, we hear this stat time and time again, around 95% of your ICP, you know, your target market is at, they're out of market at the time. So you would think that the way to reach them is by that emotional brand building activity that thrives on creativity, that thrives on emotion, that thrives on entertainment and really pulling at those emotional strings that make you more memorable, so that when it comes to the time when they are ready to buy, your brand is loved by them, or at least makes them feel something. But we don't always see that.
No.
And like you said, I think it is definitely becoming more prevalent, but it's still got a long way to go.
I think the main reason behind that is that somehow in B2B marketing especially, we love measuring and finding the attribution, right? Like, where does this leads come from? And we're very focused on short-term sales. which makes it like hard for brands, right? Which makes it hard for long-term brand building and kind of more emotional maybe campaigns or storytelling or focusing on brand, because it's a lot harder to measure. It's a lot long-term. So you can't just like look at how many clicks you got on this banner and understand that, right? So I think that that's probably why. And I think it's also somehow, I will think some of the shift came with like digital marketing, because now we're so addicted to like measuring everything, and it's a lot easier with digital marketing than it was before. And somehow that has pushed some of those like longer term activities out, because you can't really trace things back to them. So it's just in the mindset. But again, I think we had like a huge shift, I think like maybe 10 years ago, when everything was about marketing automation, and then everything was about like measuring and now I feel like it's shifting, and brand is taking a bigger place in the mindset and in the budget of like B2B marketers or B2B companies. So that's a good thing. Still learning there, but it's getting there.
Definitely. So and if we can look at your role at Cinch then, so how's this playing out within your role? Is it still a challenge to kind of convince your seniors that brand is truly worth investing in for the long term, or you know, is it not so difficult? Do they understand and value it?
I think it is still difficult, and probably is for like every brand marketers, and to kind of prove your value and prove the worth again, because it's harder to measure, right? And I think you have to like first show or first kind of get the basic covers, and it kind of depends of the type of marketing organization you're in, and like if the kind of demand gen machine is running and that there is like everything is good and the number are there, like you're delivering right on your sales pipeline, then it's probably easier to get a bit more freedom to do a bit more out of the box, or maybe branding activities in a way. But if you need to fix that first, which is kind of normal, right? You first need to focus on like making the machine run, right? Having this kind of like good demand gen machine that creates kind of like the trust in the whole marketing organization, and showing the value of marketing in delivering sales, right? So I think if that is not in place, then it's a lot harder. If it is in place, then I think you can have maybe a bit more freedom to do more creative things. And of course, it depends on the individual. I think since there's definitely many people that believe in the necessity to build a strong brand. So I'm pretty lucky in that way. Then when it comes to budget, right, and size of the team or this type of stuff, then maybe it's a bit different. But I think there's a strong belief, I think, at Cinch, that we also need to get there. So
yes. Yeah, so speaking of Cinch, could you give us a bit of insight into who Cinch are and what they do?
Yes. So Cinch is a customer engagement cloud communications platform or company. What that means is basically that we help companies and brands engage and communicate with their audiences across the customer journey and across all channels. So we provide all the tools that are behind those communications. So it can go from like you receiving an SMS from your favorite brand to tell you there's 15% off, to you communicating with customer service on WhatsApp because you need to return the pair of shoes you just received, or you communicating with your bank, again, mostly on the phone, or like on how to access your account, all the kind of security engagement you might get on your phone. So every kind of like phone communications, and it goes beyond that to like voice, like let's say your Uber driver just got there and he can't find you and you need to kind of like call him, so that's a voice part of it, or even email. So it's like it covers the entire spectrum of communication that a brand can have with this end user throughout really the journey, right? So it's, well, before, during, and after a purchase is made. So it's pretty vast in terms of like solutions that we offer, which is pretty fascinating. And there's a huge demand that it keep growing because, of course, we all using our phones to communicate with our friends, like more and more, right, with friends and family, and brands need to get there. That's where communications happen.
Yeah, it's cool. We're doing some interesting stuff with, do you know Koros? Customer engagement platform. We just started working with them. We're doing some really cool stuff around trying to bring that whole proposition to life around connectivity of that customer journey, and it's really, really interesting stuff. So you guys are 7 years old now. Would you call yourselves a startup, or are you a bit beyond that?
So we're a bit more. So Essentia's a bit of a complex history. Like we've grown like 10x in a pretty short period of time. So Cinch started at CLX, and that was kind of like the origin of the company. The company was called CLX Communications, founded in Sweden by six founders. And across the years, they like grew, and through both organic growth and through acquisition. So Cinch, the company called Cinch, was actually an acquisition made by CLX, who then took the name Cinch. So in a way, the Cinch brand in relation to CLX, or the whole kind of company we are today, is like 2 years old. So it's very new. It was kind of CLX before, and Cinch was just like a small company that we acquired and took the name from. So it's like, in terms of branding, it's a pretty complex story because we are now like a big company. Like by the end of the year, we'll be close to 4,000 people. Where 2 years ago maybe we were 600. So it's been a crazy growth, and in a way the brand have not yet grown as fast as the company has. We're not as known as like another 4,000 people company in the market because of our recent brand history, right? Because it's been a pretty new brand in a way, and because maybe we've not put like all the efforts on the brand yet, but that's definitely changing. And now that we are gaining a huge presence in the US, our two of our most recent acquisition are US-based company of pretty good size. We need to put more efforts on becoming one of the known player in the space. Like we are, so the market is called CPaaS, Communication Platform as a Service, and depending on who look at the market, but I think we consider as number two in the market, our biggest competitor being Twilio, like a big San Francisco company. So it's a very competitive market, but there's huge opportunities for growth because the whole industry, or the whole demand is growing very fast.
Sorry for my ignorance here, but were you at Cinch when you rebranded to Cinch?
No, I am pretty new at Cinch. I've joined only 7 months ago, so I'm pretty new. We just launched like a couple of months ago, maybe now, a new brand and a new website. That work was
so very cool.
Was Love started, it. Yeah, was started before I joined. But since I joined, I've helped evolve the brand and implement it. Right, like we launched our website just after the summer, and this I think has been a great like move in the right direction for us. Like we're very proud of the new brand that we've built, and I think it will help us differentiate and position us in the right place as a global leader. So yeah, we're very happy about that.
Yeah, I love the new brand. It's Thanks. Fantastic. Really, really nice. I've been seeing lots of stuff on LinkedIn around kind of some of the merch that you've been sending out to new starters and things like that as well. Really, really cool. Very nice stuff. What does an average week look like for you at Cinch? What is your remit, and how does that play out in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think being in such a fast growth company, my week tend to be a bit crazy. There's always a lot of balls to juggle with and a lot of projects. I am, in addition to brand, I'm also very involved in M&A. So every time we acquire a new company, I'm very involved before we announce that we sign a new company. So that can M&A keeps like a big part of my role in helping integrate those new companies we acquire. Of course, each company also have their brand or several brands, and so we need to kind of decide on what the next steps and how we integrate them, or do they keep the brand, when do we evolve, that type of stuff. I think the way I also see brand is like, it's not just about branding, it's not just about the logo. And I know you mentioned the merch, and a lot of people think like, yeah, brand is like merch and PowerPoint slide, right? So and it goes way beyond that. And the way I see it is like, for me, brand is your reputation. So it's trying to think about how do you influence that reputation and how do you build it? And a lot of it is through content and through the way that everybody in the company talk about the company and the brand. And so I think it's a way more holistic approach than just thinking about your logo and your visual identity. It's your story and trying to make it like bigger than your company. I think it's also where you need to start, right? It's like thinking about what is your place on the market and what is it that you bring, and how you define this kind of piece of the market or this kind of category that you want to own. And for me, that's also where brand play a big role. So yeah, so I did not answer the question very directly, I guess, what my weeks look like. But I think I'm involved in a lot of projects that can go from the website to our sales deck to new videos that we might produce, to helping some of those integrated companies come in, to thinking about the strategy for the new brand acquisition. So it's very varied. That's the fun of it, right? It's like not one day or not one week is the same as the other.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just want to pick up on something that you said there around the internal side of things. So again, I saw a really interesting quote from a company that I used to work at, a branding agency called Dixon Baxi, on LinkedIn the other day, actually, which is basically saying that how well a brand is defined and understood externally depends on how well it's understood internally. Now, you guys have got 4,000 people there. Is it a challenge for you to make sure that your brand is clearly defined? And by that, obviously, I don't just mean the identity. I mean what you stand for, your personality, tone of voice, everything. Is it a challenge to make sure that everybody feels like they're on the same page and is invested in the brand?
It is. I think it's probably harder when you grow bigger than when you're like a small company of 200 people, right? I think what's important is to start not by just like the visual identity, but what are your company's values? And I think that's something that you need to start with. I think like in defining what are those values, what do you stand for, what's important for you as a company, and have people believe in that. And then thinking about what is kind of like the company narrative for us. Yes, it's a bit of a challenge also because our story has changed. It's changed so much. And this year, particularly since I joined in the past 7 months, we've acquired 4 new companies. And that like changed our story, right? We're not the company we were last year. So we're actually starting now this kind of work on the positioning and defining what is the new narrative. How do we explain what we do? Because with all those new companies, it's a new product offering. It's a stronger product offering. It's also new markets. I think that's where what's important, right? It's really clearly defining who you're for, what's your targeted audience, and understanding them and crafting that narrative, having that clear story and having people kind of on board with it. And yeah, so I think like we've done a great work on like the values from a company perspective and from an inside perspective, what we stand for and what we believe in. And then now I think the part we need is more like of an external company story, or like how do we, like I was mentioning, craft this place or this category that we want to own and define what that is. So I think that's our next step.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, again, it's not an insignificant challenge. As a business that's growing and evolving so much in a market that is growing and evolving so much, you know, how does your brand remain consistent? And it doesn't have to be something that constantly changes to the point where it's not the same as it was yesterday and it's going to change again tomorrow. I guess that must be a challenge for you as well, to kind of try and keep that level of consistency going.
Yeah, it is. And I think that I truly believe that's also how you build a brand, right? Like that every single interaction and every single interaction people have with your brand, whether it's through like an email you send, a banner on LinkedIn, a call with an SDR, every touch point is a way to push your brand, right? Or at least like talk about what you stand for. And you need some consistency there. You need to have like a one story, of course, visually as well. You want to kind of have that consistency. But at the same time, I think a brand is alive, right? It's not, shouldn't be just stuck in one place. It's fine to evolve it. You just need to find, what is this red thread? What are the things that will not change? Probably your company values. Like those, doesn't matter if you bring new people in, that should kind of like stay the same, right? The thing you believe in from the start and why you're doing what you're doing. So I think those are important to keep. But then I think it's okay to also evolve your brand. Like the story can evolve and also visually it can evolve. I think that's fine, as long as you try to find this consistency within the evolution, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's interesting that you touch on the visual side of things, because that was what I wanted to come to next, really. So this podcast series is all about creativity in B2B tech marketing. And inevitably, when we start to talk about creativity, we think a little bit more about the visual side of things. How easy or difficult is it to bring to life the values and vision of a company like Cinch within the visual identity? But I'll add to that, how much fun is it? Because you're from an agency background, you were saying before about how kind of advertising was the backbone of your passion within creative services and marketing. So is it a fun process as well as challenging to get to that point where you feel like you've got a visual identity that really represents who you are and what you stand for?
It is a really fun process. I think it's like, and it's really interesting when you move from agency to a company, how much involve you get, and like it becomes more of your own, right? It's like it becomes your brand. But like when you create a brand in an agency for someone else, you care about how it looks, right? And then, but you don't really get into it, doesn't become yours, right, in the same way. And it also, like, interesting to me, which what I discovered, right, is like because I used to work for a branding agency as well, right? You deliver like what you think is this perfect brand with this perfect brand guidelines that looks amazing, and then usually a couple of months later you cry because the company have just like damaged it, right? They've just like changed your beautiful guidelines that you've just crafted and you're like, why did they do that? And then when you're in-house, you actually realize that what you get are really the foundations, but when you start playing with it and you start implementing it, a lot of things just don't work. You can't just like apply it exactly the way it was because it's not, it has to live with what exactly the deliverable will be, right? It can't just be like mock-ups of what it would maybe be. Then you get into the reality of it and you have to evolve the brand and you have to like make it work for you. And you also have sometimes realize that in the end, when you apply it on certain deliverables, you don't get the right feeling that you got on mockups in those guidelines, right? So it's that process, I think I never really realized before. And yeah, so now I'm sure like some of the creative that initially crafted the Cinch brand must be like, what are they doing with the brand?
It always seems to be the website. It always seems to be the website for some reason. And I don't know why that is, but usually it is in those kind of digital platforms where you kind of, as an agency, you go, oh,
yeah,
I didn't think it would look quite like that. You know, for better or for worse. I mean, if I'm brutally honest, sometimes it's more for worse. But again, like you said, you know, because you've been on both sides of the fence, you understand. And I think agencies will probably do well to remember that, to be honest.
Yeah. Maybe ourselves included. It is like a very interesting process, because I didn't think that way as well. And I think like, I mean, I work in an agency that did both the brand and the website. I think that definitely helped, because then you could like, the vision you get as an agency for the brand, you can try to carry it through the website. Otherwise, yeah, I think it's really hard. But also you have to understand that the company and the people in the company have to own this brand. And so they have to kind of continue crafting it and pushing it in a direction that they feel worked for them. I think for us, for example, like the brand foundation and the brand guidelines we got looked stunning and it was really good. But we missed a bit of the fun and a bit of the warmth that exists in the company. And it's like, okay, we went too far in maybe crafting a very clean, minimalistic Scandinavian brand, where in reality, we are like a global company with people in India and Brazil and like the US and Germany. And everybody kind of needs to feel that this brand took to them. And there's cultural differences, right? Like you don't get the same, especially visually, right? Not the same things work. And that's another really important point as well. It's like you might craft this beautiful brand and get like follow guidelines and make banners, right? We were talking about digital marketing. You make banners, none of them convert. They look stunning, but then they don't deliver. Nothing converts. Well, you have to just evolve things and then, you know, try out what will work while still keeping in the brand. It also has to deliver. So I think that that's another part that sometimes is not truly understood by brand agencies.
But I mean, it's an interesting point. How do you do that though? How do you bring those really disparate and, you know, from a geographical point of view and from a departmental point of view in a big organization, how do you bring enough of those people on that journey so that it's not just a case of, okay, we've evolved our brand, here's a set of brand guidelines, this is what you need to do now. They get shot in a drawer, they never get looked at really because people weren't on that journey in the first place. But you can't bring all 4,000 people with you every single step of the way as you, I'm not necessarily just talking about a full rebrand, but I'm talking about kind of an evolution. How do you make sure that enough of those people feel like they're stakeholders in the process for it to be able to be truly valued internally?
So so I wasn't there at the beginning of like the rebrand in a way or the brand refresh at Sinch, but we had what we call like a brand chapter. So it was like people from different part of the organization involved throughout the process. Being a Swedish company, everything is very collaborative. And in a way it's a bit, I mean, for me, like being French, it's a bit counterintuitive. It's like, don't do design by committee, right? That's kind of the worst. But then in the end, in the Swedish process, it also helped bring people along. So it's like involving people throughout. And I think that worked very well. And honestly, like everybody has been really happy about like the new brand. Maybe because I'm at the heart of it, I haven't heard the negative feedback, right? It's a possibility, but I haven't. And I think now, that in a way was like the easy part, because then we control kind of the guidelines and the website. Now when it's becoming more difficult is because we have like a global organization with local teams, with local marketers, local designers that have to kind of make the brand their own and stay aligned while exploring what will work in the market. So we've also started to like, we have like weekly meetings with some of those marketing designers across the world. So from India, Belgium, Brazil, and we look at what got produced like in the past week, and how everybody is like applying the brand and playing with it. And we also really like learn from each other and get inspired by each other, which is really fun. Which is one of the great part of being in such a global company, right? And it's understanding those differences, right? It's like what will be produced in Germany is not going to be the same as what's going to be produced in India because of cultural differences and emotional reaction that are different, right? Like they don't get attracted by the same thing depending on where you are. So that's, but it's the trick is to try to still stay within the brand without being like a brand police. It's like has to be more of a guardian and more of an inspiration and making sure that people feel they can belong to the brand and also play with it.
That's it. It's flexibility, isn't it? You know, and I think mm-hmm. the best brand guidelines have enough wiggle room and margin to be playful and to experiment, but obviously without going completely the other way and taking it into places where it was never really intended to go, you know, with detrimental effects. I just wanted to come back to the point, we touched on agencies a little bit. We can't go through this podcast without mentioning your amazing podcast, the Tech Marketing Pod Chat. I listened to an episode not too long ago with Luke Richardson, Clio.
Yep.
Who's actually just agreed to be a speaker on our upcoming event. So
nice.
You've indirectly hooked us up. So thank you very much for that. That episode was all about in-house, internal versus external, agency versus internal creative teams, what the best balance is. What's your approach at Cinch? Do you try and keep as much of it in-house as possible in terms of brand design and development? Do you work with agencies?
So we work with a lot of agencies. I think like historically we didn't have a lot of designers in-house. And I've relied on a lot of external help. And I think it's interesting because, of course, I have my whole background in agencies. So I definitely see like the value of agencies. But I do believe a hybrid model is the way to go. I think like the larger you become and because of the necessity for tech companies to like use content and rely so much on content and produce a lot of content to use throughout like their journey, right? Like it's, I think for me, content has a place everywhere in the marketing journey or in the buying journey, from like top of the funnel sort of leadership to like the bottom of the funnel type of content. So there's content kind of everywhere, and that need for content keep evolving and keep increasing, and you need to scale it. And I think in order to do that, you do need to have people in-house that truly understand what the company does. And I think whatever you might say, like the external agency, they will never get to the same level of understanding, because when you're in the company, you do it day in, day out, right? So I think you get like an understanding that it's like a different. And for like some of the speed that we live in, right, with digital marketing, you need to deliver fast. But in order to scale and for some out-of-the-box creative projects, I think it's key to also seek creativity elsewhere. Because when you are working with a brand day in, day out, and you're like so embedded into it, it's sometimes hard to kind of stick back and be very creative about it. So I think it's that kind of like balance. It's you pick the projects that will be better served by like an external agency, but have kind of an in-house team that can run and deliver on a lot of needs constantly.
Yeah, it's a dream team, isn't it, really? And I think from an agency point of view, part of the early conversations we often have with tech companies is, look, we're not here to take over. We're not here to put your creatives out of a job. You know, ultimately, it's about working together and using the core strengths of both sides of the coin to deliver on exactly what you need and have that flexibility, have that outside perspective, but also have those folks within the team, within your team, who really live and breathe the brand day in, day out, and can add that kind of that passion and that understanding to the whole process. So yeah, definitely. And just on your podcast, are you enjoying it? Are you enjoying being a podcast host? Have you got more in the pipeline?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because I a bit of the history, I guess, on the podcast. I started it when I was still on the agency side. And it was initially called the B2B Marketing Fika, Fika being like the afternoon tea that you have in Sweden. And so that's kind of how it started. And I started by interviewing like CMOs at tech company, right? Like my ICP, you would say, now that you're like on the in-house side. And I loved it. It was really cool to kind of meet all those people and also kind of have this discussion in a not selling way, right? Just having a chat. And then so really enjoy it. And then when I moved on the client side, I was like, I really like this podcast, I should continue, because I meet so many great people. It's a good way for me to kind of stay tuned to what's going on in the market and also ask my peers what they're doing and how they're doing it, right? Learning from them. Like I was, like you talked about Luke, I was definitely like super interested in like how he built an in-house team. I was like, how can I do that? So tell me, what have you done? So but I would say now it's becoming a bit challenging. I think I have probably like maybe one more episode coming, but I think I will probably pause for a little while, mostly for scheduling issues. I think it's like my job is very intense, and I realize that, okay, I'm not sure this is what I should prioritize right now. I work long hours, so it's like, should I do a podcast or should I be with my kids for like those kind of couple of extra hours I have? So I think that's that it became a bit more of a challenge, to be honest. And I think somehow, I think as we're going back to working hybrid and people, especially Q4 is like a especially busy time of the year, I think at least in Sweden. Like just the, I had many people can cancel or reschedule a couple of times. I was like, I don't have time for this. I enjoy the discussions, but the whole logistic around it, I think it's like where I can't spend as much as I did. So I still love podcasts and we are like planning a podcast with Cinch. Not with me being the host though, but I'll leave that to some of our customer engagement experts, right? So they can actually talk about what we do more. But I love podcasts as a channel for sure, and I think it's very valuable. But I think my personal podcast will probably take a little pause pretty soon. That's what I'm guessing.
But I mean, you know, that's the beauty of podcasts in a way. You know, you don't have a kind of contracted production schedule to stick to, or you know, you don't. You don't have a publishing deal where you're kind of, you know, you absolutely have to do these things. Some of my favorite podcasts just kind of just pause on a whim and then they come back and it's great. Here's a new episode. Brilliant. I'll listen to that. And then if another one crops up in a couple of weeks, great. If not, then I'll listen to something else. You know, that's the beauty of podcasts, really. You know,
no, so that's true. I think there is like a value in keeping the consistency, right? I really try to do that at the beginning and have like an episode like every other week was my initial ambition, and I had to kind of tone that down a bit. But I think it is hard. This kind of a lot, it involves quite a lot, right? Like for me, the discussion part is so fun. All the rest, I'm like, yeah, if I had someone else doing all the rest for me.
Well, thankfully, I've got somebody else doing that for me. So yeah. I just get to have these lovely conversations, have a chat with you, and then go off and do my own thing. So that's very fortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love the discussion. That's for sure. I think that's like the those conversation that's super valuable, and it's fun meeting people everywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out my marketing director Alex for and Jazz, actually our marketing executive, for their hard work in making all this happen, because without them it certainly wouldn't. So big thanks to them, and a big thanks to you, Gwen. This has been really, really interesting chat. One last question from me, which is something that we ask all of our guests on the Changemakers: is there a project from your career so far that you're more proud of than anything else? And it doesn't have to be from Cinch or kind of client side, it can be an agency project, it can be your art gallery, it can be absolutely anything. Is there one thing in particular that you would pick out that stood out above everything else?
Well, I think on a personal level, I think, yeah, definitely the art gallery was like a fantastic project. But I think to maybe make it a bit more relevant here, I will pick the work I did when I worked in the agency. So the latest agency that I worked with was called Skona, and they're a B2B tech agency based in San Francisco and Stockholm. And one of our clients is still their client, I think, a tech company called Snowflake. And it's not one project, it's like years of projects together with Snowflake that I think was one of the best kind of project or client that I worked for over the years, especially because we got that opportunity as an agency to get very close to them and to become kind of like their external in-house type of agency and be almost in-house, I think, and see them grow the way they did and go through like a couple of brand refresh, three or four iterations of their websites, amazing campaigns from like videos to billboards. So I think that was one of the cool things we did at Snowflake, and I think they still do, with that being based in San Francisco. If you want to be like considered as one of the cool tech companies, you have to have your billboards along the 1&1 in Silicon Valley. And so this series of billboard that we did with Snowflake, cool words, like cool kind of creative around it, mostly focused on type and on the wording, which was really, really fun to work on. And like every 6 weeks, we'll have to come up with like a new headline for that that big billboard. And that really helped in building their tone of voice and what they believe in and who they are as a company today. And I think all that work with Snowflake has been a pretty great product for me and for my career. It was one of the reasons I think managed to make the switch.
That's really interesting. I'm a massive admirer of Snowflake. I mean, their IPO, was it last year? Was absolutely yep. huge.
Yes.
And they've gone from strength to strength since. But what was it about them as a client? Were they just lovely people and really creatively brave? Or was it you guys at Skona were just the perfect match for them? What was it about that it made it so cool?
We were the perfect match, I think. And we had a really strong relationship with them. I think that matters a lot, right? In the way the company treat this agency, or it was more than just like a service provider relationship, right? It was really a partnership, and the agency was involved in so many different projects and so many different aspects of the brands. And yes, like really great people to work with. I think like I try to be that client, right? Now that I moved on the other side, I think like we all know, right? We have like really cool clients and some that are not as lovely. And I think one of the things I think that makes the difference is how as a company you recognize the work done and how grateful you are, right? Just like saying thank you for the work done. I think it's like it goes a long way. And I think they were that type of client. They were always very like grateful and have this understanding that what we did for them was also difficult, right? It's not like, please just put this together. Well, you know how it is, right? Like, it's like, why did this take 10 hours, right? Like, we're just like, So I think they were this kind of understanding client of understanding creativity. And yes, they had also a CMO that had this desire to build a strong brand, crafted a great like story and built a category. So you were like at the forefront of that, like building the category, becoming kind of the category leader, adding kind of brand on top of it and building that strong brand. So I think they had it all. So which was really fun to work with.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? When you get a client who you really, really get that super strong sense that they don't see brand and creativity as a cost, you know, they see it as an investment that will return the more they put into it and the more their agency puts into it. And yeah, absolutely. You know, we're really fortunate to have a couple of clients like that that we love working with here and for those exact reasons. So yeah, absolutely perfect. Listen, Gwen, I really, really enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you so much for taking time on your day off, I might add. I really do appreciate that. So thank you so much for being on the Changemakers. And have a great rest of your day. Enjoy your day off.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Gwen.
Bye-bye.